My name is Heather. I am a PhD candidate in the School of Population and Public Health at the University of British Columbia, which is on the west coast of Canada in Vancouver. My background is in health communications, so ultimately I'm interested in understanding how interactions between patients and providers can ultimately work to improve health and treatment outcomes. And the specific work that I'm presenting today is looking at gender-specific predictors of retention in methadone maintenance treatment among long-term opioid users. So I'll be providing a background on methadone maintenance treatment in British Columbia, as well as on studies of retention and why gender is important to look at when we're talking about retention to methadone treatment. I'll share my objective as well as methods and results, discussion and recommendations, and then limitations and conclusions. So opioid dependence is known as a chronic relapsing disease with a number of harms associated for the individual as well as for communities. Dependence on opioids occurs when there is an excess dopamine release and a need for an opiate to continuously occupy that receptor in the brain. Opioid substitution treatments, such as methadone, are important as a legal prescribed opiate is given, and that opiate works to sort of occupy that receptor in the brain and replace sort of the stimulant that the heroin would have provided. We know that these treatments are important in North America, as the prevalence of opioid use is high here compared to the global average. The United Nations World Drug Report has also shown that heroin-related deaths are on the increase in North America. Methadone maintenance treatment has been around for 50 years or so and works to substitute for heroin by binding to opioid receptors in the brain. It reduces cravings and also sort of blocks the euphoric effects of heroin. It's only required to be administered once daily as it has a half-life of approximately 24 hours. In most cases, it's an oral solution of methadone. Various studies have shown that when patients are retained in methadone maintenance treatment, it's extremely effective at reducing risks associated with injections, such as infectious diseases, and can work to increase quality of life and physical and mental health and social functioning. So methadone is the most common form of treatment for opioid dependence in Canada and in British Columbia specifically. In BC, it consists of three components. So there's a prescribing component, a dispensing component, and a psychosocial component. It's important to note that this psychosocial component is not standard across provinces, and it's not even standard across BC. It really just depends on the resources available to the physician, whether they have the time and training to offer this. There's also much debate around whether psychosocial supports and services should be mandatory or should be the choice of the patient of whether they want to be receiving these. We have two regulatory bodies. So that first prescribing component is done by the College of Physicians and Surgeons of BC. And the dispensing is done by the College of Pharmacists of BC. And what that means is that patients attend a pharmacy on a daily basis and they undergo daily witness ingestion, so they have to take the methadone at the pharmacy under the supervision of a pharmacist. There has been some speculation around whether these strict regulations that are really in place for patient safety, but there's some discussion around whether these actually make it difficult for patients to adhere and remain retained in treatments. So this study, the outcome is retention, and this is one of the most consistent measures of treatment effectiveness for methadone maintenance treatment. And retention over the long term has really been shown to be essential to achieve optimal health and treatment outcomes. There are various well-studied predictors of retention to methadone. Dose is one of them. So in different regions, there are different suggestions for maintenance dose. In British Columbia, it's between 60 and 120 milligrams a day, and it's been shown that if patients are prescribed this dose and adhering to this dose, they have a greater chance of success on this treatment. So we know about dose, we know about a number of other sociodemographic and health factors, but more recent studies are looking to include more program and social factors to try to get at understanding what else might be associated with retention. So I'm looking specifically at a gendered approach. So many studies of opioid dependence have mostly males, or if there are men and women, there are often a lack of comparison between genders. So if we really want to get at understanding what's going on independently for men and for women, looking at gender as a predictor in our statistical models is often not enough. Instead, we need to perhaps look at men and women separately to understand what might be associated with engagement for men and for women. So the objective then of this work was to determine gender-specific predictors of methadone maintenance treatment retention. So the study sample were long-term opioid users in the downtown east side of Vancouver. The downtown east side is known as one of the poorest postal codes in North America. There's very high rates of injection drug use, infectious diseases, poor housing conditions and health. We recruited 178 participants and were able to successfully recruit almost an equal proportion of men and women, which is very important. As I mentioned, women are often underrepresented in these studies. Inclusion criteria for this study were that the men and women had been regularly injecting opioids at least 5 years in their life, whereas in our sample, we had on average 16 years. So these were very long-term users. The average age of regular injection was 26 years, and on average, they had attempted methadone treatment 4 times before in their lifetime. So the data were all collected at a one-time interview at a private and confidential research office. A comprehensive set of questionnaires were delivered, and the process took between 3 and 4 hours on average, covering sociodemographics, physical health, mental health and drug use, healthcare and treatment access, and victimization. So as I mentioned, I'm looking at retention, and this variable was originally collected as the number of days in the prior month that participants had accessed methadone maintenance treatment. We had a number of participants that were reporting either 0 days or 30 days, so we had not a normal distribution, and so we had to dichotomize this variable, making it 2 different categories of less than 20 days or 20 days or more. This cut point has been used previously with a very similar sample, and the idea is that it still allows some flexibility for patients to not be coming to treatment on a daily basis, but they're still in contact with healthcare services and with the methadone treatment twice as many days in a month as they are not. So descriptive variables were assessed for the overall sample and then separately for women and men. And then logistic regression models were built for the overall sample, and then for the women separately, and then for the men. This is the approach that was taken to the logistic regression model building. So there were descriptive variables organized in 6 blocks. Those blocks represent the questions that were asked, I mentioned earlier, the various topics asked in the interview. And variables with a p-value of less than 0.2 were carried forward and adjusted. Combinations of variables in each block were tested, and combinations with the lowest AIC, which is Akaiki Information Criterion for the model fit, were carried forward to the final model. Variables were then dropped one at a time until a final model was determined. So the results I'm going to present, first I have a descriptive table and then the results of the logistic regression models. So there's a column for the total, the participants that were not considered retained, and the participants that were considered retained. And this is for everybody overall. You can see that at the bottom there's a star is for significance at the overall level, green are variables that are significant for men, and red are variables that were significant for women. So I'll just go through a few of them here. For example, we see that Aboriginal ancestry, those reporting Aboriginal ancestry were less likely to be retained. The red we see for women, having biological children was significant. So we know that often women who are pregnant are prioritized for access to methadone maintenance treatment, or women that have children may be in more frequent contact with social services and then healthcare services. So this is sort of acts as a protective factor to be engaged in healthcare and in treatment. We also see days using illicit opioids is significantly lower among those retained, which is what we expect. It still is almost 21 days in the prior month, though, that those that are accessing treatment are still using. Some of the program factors were a client satisfaction score, which measures whether patients, their overall perceptions of care, so whether they were satisfied with the services received, whether they would attend similar services in the future or would recommend them, and we see that this remains significant. Some of these, all of these variables, as well as all the other ones that were significant in the descriptive analysis that aren't shown here, were carried forward for the model building. So I'll present now the models. So the first column is the model for women and men. The next column is the model for women, and then the next column is the model for men. What we see is that factors that are independently and significantly associated with a higher odds of retention overall are treatment satisfaction, having a biological child, and physical neglect. Factors that are associated with a lower odds of retention are Aboriginal ancestry, illegal activity as the main source of support, and risky sexual and drug use behaviors. These behaviors are around injection practices, so sharing needles, reusing needles, and the sexual behaviors are around, for example, number of partners and whether participants were engaged in sex work. In each of the columns, we can see that the factors that remain significant differ for women and for men. So in terms of the findings around retention, what we can see is that patients present to treatment with diverse needs, and it's possible that they're not all being met with the currently available treatments. We see that illicit opioid use is persisting even among those that are engaged in care, as is illegal activities, risky sexual and drug use behaviors. So for some, this treatment is working well, but for others it is not. We see as well that the factors associated with retention differ for men and for women, so we need to be paying attention to the potential role of gender in retention. It's also important to recognize that gender is often very closely related to other factors, such as income, family and social supports, ethnicity, so gender is really just a starting point, but we can consider that it is related to many other factors and may be important to consider in that sense. In terms of recommendations, it would be important for program and policymakers, as well as healthcare providers, to approach methadone maintenance treatment with an understanding of the potential role of gender on retention. Specifically in the context of British Columbia, we could look at revisiting some of the stringent regulations. For example, there is an option for methadone treatment to be delivered, but that's only available for patients that can prove a physical disability. Whereas we know that there are a number of patients that perhaps have mental or psychological problems that could be benefiting from this. There's also a need to explore alternative treatments. In British Columbia, we also have Suboxone, which is a buprenorphine and naloxone mixed treatment, but it's not been as popularized or as methadone has. There are a number of important limitations to consider. This data is cross-sectional, so it's all collected at one time point, so we can't draw temporal or causal associations. We also had a smaller sample size at 178, so that limited the opportunity to stratify our analyses by other important factors, such as ethnicity. As I mentioned, this is very specific to one context in Vancouver, and so the external validity might not be strong for other regions and contexts. And there were a number of important variables that we weren't able to collect. So, for example, patient-provider relationships, the type of prescriber, so whether it was a general practitioner or an addiction physician, and these are things we could in the future potentially explore qualitatively as well, to get a better sense of patient perspectives of this treatment. So my general conclusions are that gender provides really a starting point for understanding a complex range of patient treatment needs, but that there are other factors we need to consider as well, and we could stratify our analyses in similar ways. on different factors. It's also important to prioritize and consider a patient-centered approach, where not only between patients and healthcare providers, but when we're making policies, to be considering the patient perspective, because this could really work to strengthen the opportunity to improve treatment and health outcomes for these patients. I'd like to first and foremost recognize and thank the JEMA study participants for sharing their stories and insights, as well as our study interviewers, Kirsten, who's one of them, is here today, and co-authors of this work and funding and support. Thank you.
Could you explain a little, in a little more detail, is methadone distributed on a daily basis only in British Columbia?
So it's prescribed by a physician, and then in order to pick it up, patients have to go to a pharmacy, and it's an oral solution that they take in front of the pharmacist. So it's daily witnessed ingestion. And in some cases, they can prescribe take-home doses, but that would often be developed over a long period of time with trust between the physician and the patient, and it's not as common.
So how many of the folks in your study would have done take-home doses?
I would think not many, if any.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
it
also... Right, and would likely depend on the patient demographic as well. These are often polysubstance users, long-term users, so often there's a lot of stigma attached there, and so they're not considered or eligible for take-home. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So we did find for both women and men overall that a higher dose was more significantly associated with being retained. The College of Physicians and Surgeons does recommend between 60 and 120 milligrams, but some patients definitely were prescribed above the 120 milligrams as well. So I think, while those guidelines are there, it's important to consider on a patient-by-patient basis what's going to work best. And then around the illicit opiates, your question was?
Just in terms of the methadone dosing and the number of people that are explaining today.
Right.
On average of illicit.
So whether I've looked at those together. Not that I can't think on the top of my head, but I think that's a really good point. I have a strong feeling that there's probably a correlation there between the number of days used and the dose. Yeah.
Thanks.